everyone. Welcome to The Fern, episode 7.
Episode 7.
Yeah, man.
You know what?
You know what we need to do, right? When we play a game, we need to make sure we draw in a way that we both can't fight to bring the energy up. I think if we play, you've won, I've lost. But the thing is,
again,
I don't know. Yeah, well, when you use a cheap broken team I've put together for you. Fuck off, man. You weren't even that bad in the team.
Angel. No, he didn't do anything.
You know what? I should have left you to it when you went, Crown and Grayscale, they're perfect. I should have gone, you're right, they are. Forget about Angel, she's shit. The forum can't go.
So, yeah, ran my usual Corsair guys. So we had Corsair, Kraken, Jack, Tentacles, Angel. Then I swapped in Vetsacana.
Yeah,
to try
run
them out.
Vetsacana.
Yeah. And you tried a new list.
Yeah, I had a quick look at my engineering team. I've been trying to create a new Jank, which is the Pinvite. Kind of...
After just spending an entire episode saying you shouldn't play Jank.
Guaranteed, though. Not Jank, guaranteed. No, actually, no. Fuck, there were dice rolls involved. I missed a bit, actually.
That's what anyway, I lost, mate.
The team is Pinvike with Mother, Colossus, Locus, Ratchet, and Hoist, and that's the big fucking fuck off Black Earth opener, which can flat out kill some team.
Mm.
I kind of wish there were a way to get 5 Black Earth on the board, but well,
yeah.
Can't have everything.
So sort of, I kick to you, and then, because you've basically got ways of retrieving with Locus and Mother.
Yeah,
I took the really high risk, sort of try and put it towards the very corner of the pitch, on the very, like, just over the halfway line, on the very edge, with the kick, so I couldn't get the reroll, and it went off the edge, so you just dropped it on one of your guys. But I thought, you were going to get it either way, so I thought I might as well take the chance where there's a potential that someone's going to be left standing right on the edge of the wing for Jack to come in and grab. Yeah. Plan from there was to just... try and see what Sakana does, really. Just try and play my usual game, but try and check him out a bit.
Yeah, the engineer, kind of the master for ball retrieval. I think the key difference between the engineer and the fisherman, though, is that the fishermen are good at retrieving ball off an actual model, and the engineer is kind of the master of the free ball.
Apart from Cinder.
Yeah, yeah.
Because hashtag blacksmiths get everything.
Yeah, the fucking, that kill the ball shit. It's one of the... It's a really bullshit player. Like, you know when people looked at airmail on Divana and went, 14-inch? What? It's like, wait a minute, fucking Kinder gets, like, effectively, like, 40-inch worth of... She, if the ball's on one end of the pitch and she wants it on the very other end of the pitch and go, kill the ball, goal kick, other end. Yep. Like, she can literally traverse the entire length of the pitch if she wants. Receiving, I think it's pretty much impossible to... make the engineer leave a kick they can't get back.
Yep, especially with the list you took.
Yeah, just Mother around anyway. She's got 5-inch jog, 7-inch sprint. She got another 4-inch with another 2-inch on top of that to retrieve a free ball with the webbing trap.
Mm.
So yeah, on that kick, just can't keep it away.
And you know, if she can't get to it, then she might be able to put it in a position for Hoist to replicate Burrow if need be. You know?
Yeah, there's no end to the fun.
Yeah.
But Vexicana, like a weird model looking at him compared to regular.
Mm.
I'm a bit worried at first. When they announced all the veteran model, I think I said to you before the game, that they tend to kind of make the veteran model, other than maybe veteran bigot, but they clearly want the model to be, I don't know, they have that problem where they want it to be not better, but also a bit similar. They don't want it to be a completely different model. I think it's kind of almost a weird position to take. I kind of wish they'd go more extreme with the veteran.
Mm.
I don't know, how do you feel on the board?
So, I really liked him. Mm. I really, really liked him. Bag of coffers, I got a lot of work out of. Accidentally tried to get more work out of it than you can at the end.
Yeah, trying to be cheeky.
Yeah, so I put a full stack of 3 on him. So the final activation of the turn was Locus had the ball, Sakana was engaging him, but I'd managed to position him where when Locus's gravity well pulled him in, he bumped up against Corsair, so I was still outside of your 1 but inside my 2 in that 2-1 shimmy, and then sort of laid an attack into him, got the tackle because Sakana tackles on 1 the veteran, which is awesome. Then you couldn't do anything about it, so at that point I was going to try and farm up some momentum, walk around, pass to Angel and get the snapshot because she was within tapping range.
Yeah,
and I couldn't quite reach the goal, but you know, her just being that 4 inches out just made it just that little bit easier. So I bought the first attack and then went, awesome. So it doesn't say you have to use Bag of Coffers at the start of your activation, so I'm going to use Bag of Coffers now.
Yeah.
And you were like, no. fuck. So my world fell around my ears for about 2 seconds until I realised I was basically fine. Just put another attack into Locust, got the dodge for the momentum, yeah. Walked around, pass, snapshot, you know, got the goal. But yeah, really likes Skarner. Though it was a bit unfortunate that for a lot of this game, him and Colossus were off in a corner doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Of Skarner couldn't just walk away because he'd get knocked down. But then every time I dodged and then just tried to run away, you'd just chase after me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bit of a shame that he didn't see more action in the pitch. But when he was in the middle of it, he was brilliant.
Yeah.
That being able to allocate influence midway through a turn is incredible. So I didn't get to use it as often as I would like to have done, but I did use it two times, I think. Yeah. It went onto another model during this game. And it's nice to be able to push someone into that like dangerous territory. Like, for example, I threw it on Kraken, and his drag threat range then went from 10 inches to 12.
Yeah.
You know, because suddenly you can sprint before he does it. Or I put it on Tentacles, so then Tentacles could then go and get a tackle, or whereas before he was just a mascot with the 4-inch jog. You know, it's being able to allocate influence during the mid turn is absolutely huge, because yeah. You can look around, you can see what your opponent's doing, and you can write, that's not a threat, oh, he's got a heroic, I need to bear that in mind. But then suddenly 2 activations later you go, oh shit, well that guy can now actually do something, especially in yeah. a game where like this, where the ball was so important. Like in a takeout heavy game, 1 influence, while it's still important, I think it's not as dangerous as in this goal scoring heavy team, because it suddenly meant that, especially with the fish, giving 1 influence to anyone who didn't have one before, suddenly they can tackle.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly they can take the ball back, or if the ball's free, they can get it and then make a pass instead of just having to hold on to it. So I really like Bag of Coffers. I think I got more use out of that than I got out of his From the Shadows. I think it's called From the Shadows, where he gets the extra movement from starting in cover.
Oh, yeah, Rachel Black. Cover of Darkness.
Yeah. I think I got more use out of Bag of Coffers than I usually get out of Cover of Darkness. Cover of Darkness is nice, but Bag of Coffers is something that I'm definitely going to use every single turn.
Yeah.
I know that it means he can't be allocated as much influence, but that also means that you've got more flexibility with where that goes and when it goes, and the fact it comes with the free bonus time is just really nice.
Yeah, the thing I like about Bag of Coffers is it's a reactive player.
Yeah.
That it's not set in stone what you can do with it. And be able to buy a character player or buy, you know, something, a sprint, change your dog to a sprint, buy a bit of, yeah, get a free pass.
Tentacles can suddenly blind someone.
Yeah.
Jack can goad someone.
The bonus time.
Yeah.
I think it's just a nice little buffer that helps in a big way. Hard to take the hit with Skarner, though. He's one of the more manoeuvrable models in the Fishermen, generally. And Poised makes him kind of annoying to deal with, generally.
Yeah, Poised is really nice. Losing Poised for Bag of Coffers, I think I would have preferred Poised.
Yeah.
Yeah, but keeping anatomical precision, I think that's crucial. I think if you'd lost that, then...
Oh, I think that's bullshit. You should never have had that removed.
Nah.
I'd have taken points of... I'd rather him have points on anatomical if I was playing against him.
Yeah. I'm just going to bring his card up quick.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, in the game... Yeah.
Having both them plays trigger momentously off 3, you know, fancy footwork, that's the tackle that gets around close control, basically, is yeah. on 3, where he's got a normal tackle on 1, and then he's got raise the black flag, which is basically you lose 2 inches of movement, someone within 6 inches of you gains 2 inches of movement.
Yeah.
That was really nice. I used that on him to get him out of trouble once. Yeah. There was a second time I really needed it to work, but they were just out of 6 inches, and there was no way I could have got to it. I mean, on a wrap, you would get, you know, on a wrap of 2, you could dodge away and then use it, but how often is that going to come up?
It's quite far down my playbook, which I don't mind because they're quite good players. The thing that kind of gets me about the thing, like a lot of the players the Fishermen seem to be getting at the minute, and I wonder if the Navigators will have something similar. A huge close control negative. Harriet, even then, Harriet's got that, hasn't she?
Mm.
That I think they're trying to... I'm half wondering if they're slightly regretting close control.
But I think it's... The way they can also be triggered off hitting someone else, I think it's more about killing the ball. Mm. You know, because I think that's been said, like, publicly. Like, they don't like the way the ball's being just killed in the game called Guild Ball. So the idea is of just snacking it on a 5 defence model in cover, the idea that he can just come up and hit a 3 model, and that sort of, as long as he gets 3 hits, he can take the ball off them.
The problem I have generally with them trying to nerf killing the ball is that you can't underestimate how much better getting a goal is compared to killing people. Like, I think early on when we were playing Guild Ball, I went, if you get a goal, that person has just killed 2 people, you've got an extra point of influence, you've got momentum, and that'll just off a dice roll.
Yeah.
If I turned around to you and went, I've got a new model, that legendary player, if I roll four dice and get a four, I kill two models. You go, that's ridiculous. That can't be real. And you go, you know what, when I kill them, I get a point of influence too. And you go, no, that can't be right. But that's what a goal is. It's, I kill two models, effectively. How much effort does it take to kill two models? Like, it's considered a great activation if you kill two models in a turn.
Yeah.
In an activation, in a turn, killing two or three considered really great. The problem with goal scoring generally, it's way more powerful than killing. And killing the ball, it's like if I'm running a butchering team with Brisket's a pretty good striker. It's not like she can't get goals.
Mm.
But when you're up against someone like the Fisherman, or the Alchemist, or the Engineer, people who can manoeuvre the ball and score quickly, the problem is that I can't get two takeouts before you get the one goal. And more importantly, there are a lot of other things that kind of factor into goal scoring generally. Goal scoring generally quite clean in the activation. There are only a few models who you really need to go, usually the most goal scoring setup. If I pass, they dodge 4 inch forward, and on their next turn they'll get a goal. And every time someone's in that situation where that model's clearly going to get a goal next, it becomes an emergency immediately.
Yeah.
It's not like, yeah, I can look and go, oh, tough hide, he's got 18 health, he's got decent defence, I think he'll survive, I'll leave that. And that's just on a 2 VP takeout. But on a goal, like, fuck. 4 VP waiting to be taken for nothing, basically. It's not like I get a counter-attack on my goal and go, I'll do this, and I don't get the goal. Like, other than, like, making sure you don't have enough momentum, trying to tie you up in melee, kind of. The things that nerf goals a lot aren't as good. It's like the shit that nerfs the takeout game, if you know what I mean. So, Tenderizer.
Mm.
Like, in an angel goal, like when she's doing the 5-die kick, even if Tenderizer blocking the goal and going plus one TN, you're going to fucking get the goal, most likely. You're better off rolling for that than not.
You're probably going to get countercharged at that point, though. If he's at the extent of his 4 and she's at the extent of her 10.
Then you should just engage him. It's not the end of the world for him. Like, really, there are counter rush keeper, I think, is one of the most overrated traits from the game. It's so easy to negate. And if you're in a situation where you're going to move an 8, you're probably in a situation where you can negate rush keeper. I think I've only ever had rush keeper pay off once. And that situation was so specific. And it's not even like I got rush keeper, it was just the threat of it.
That's it. I mean, I think it's almost like in the same way that Obulus's legendary isn't just the fact that he takes all your momentum and you have none and he has all the stuff you had. It's the fact that he can threaten that throughout the entire game.
Yeah.
So I think the benefit of Rush Keeper isn't the counter charge when it happens once, one game in 3. It's the fact that people have to work around it. You know, it's having to either dodge in or it's having to, like, sort of get into a position where he can't charge into you.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you get the work out of Rush Keeper, not the fact that, like, oh yeah, I'll get the counter charge off.
Oh yeah, I get that the threat is the main benefit. Yeah. I'm just getting the benefit isn't that great. Like, especially in Fisherman, when you've got 2 inch melee already, you just need to engage him, bang, over.
Yeah.
Not really, you go, oh well, I'm engaged now, okay, minus one die, hitting on whatever. Normally, like, for the Engineer, I can't imagine, I'm going up against Tenderizer. Quite like Tenderizer, goalie, plus one TN, got Rush Keeper, blah blah blah. He knocks down early, so if you get the tackle, if you get the charge, you can knock you down. Even in that situation, I can't think of any of my good kickers who I feel bad about going, yeah, they engaged Tenderizer, end of manoeuvre, or charge him with hoist, push dodge, I've negated your melee, and I've left. The bad thing about having a goalie generally, it has a target near the goal who you can bounce off of.
Yeah.
So normally taking full advantage of the 4-inch, you know, TN isn't always that good. You're giving more range on the tackle. I kind of prefer to have...
You almost want them to be
Near the goal to kind of try and get break line of sight, maybe be intercepting. And then, more importantly, you have to come really far at the end. And if I'm lucky, you have to end with Rush Keeper. But more than likely or not, you're not going to have to worry about it. Most good strikers have an 8-inch kick.
Mm.
So that'll negate that. Really hard to craft a situation where, but that's just thinking on the situation that nerf goal have to be so harsh. It's like, if you can just get a clear line of sight, you're usually good. And that's the thing, I always put it in that context. Getting a goal is killing two models.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not nothing. It's not something you can ignore. Someone who's about to get a goal that you can prevent, it's an emergency every time. It's never like, oh, they get that goal, but whatever. Usually the best situation you hope for is that you get the goal kick and you get the counter goal.
Or if you're playing into a team that you know is looking for the goals, then you can just sort of, like I said, just kill it. Just like on the goal coming back out. You just kill the ball. You put it either... Well, you've done it before. Like, when I've had all my models on the right wing have activated, and I've got ones on the left, you put it where only... Oh, yeah. So, like, they can't get to it.
But that is effectively my core defence. Just not having the ball near.
Yeah.
The thing that makes the Corsair team so hard to play again is that killing the ball isn't enough. The Corsair can start killing people.
Well, that's why it was so good in the list you took. I think everyone in the world had reanimate. There was Stoic, there was Sturdy, Tough-Eyed, all over the pitch.
They're a hard team to fuck with.
That was one hell of a slog. We played that one off the clock for some reason, and I think it was about a 3-hour game.
It's a tough one to go with. They're a tough team. A couple of two armor floating around, a couple of Tough-Eyed. They're not spectacularly survivable. Like, not in a way that...
Maybe they're not Butchers survivable, but they're Corsair survivable. Corsair Kraken and Jack going into them, they were still...
When you can't put your plus one damage, yeah, great. But almost every team in the game, apart from Fisherman, can get plus one damage. And even situations that were favourable to me didn't quite work out the way I wanted them to. One of my big activations going in was going to be, oh, I'll have Pinvike go, and she's going to do a shitload of damage on a singled out Kraken, and I've got like 8 crowd out.
Yeah.
I had to give that whole thing up just to try and prevent Angel from getting the ball.
Yeah.
And it didn't even pan out fundamentally. I should have just left it. I should have counted it.
Because if you'd killed Kraken, the action was so deep in your half that Kraken would have been out for 2 turns.
Yeah.
Just trying to get back in.
Just freeing up models, shit like that. It's a hard one to go with. You don't know what... You can always look back in the game and go, I should have done that when I should have done this. But if Fleenforge nerf killing the ball to the point where it's really hard to keep off dragging teams, and from what I'm seeing so far, a lot of the teams have really great shit for getting the ball back from range. That seems to be more of a common thing.
Mm.
A lot of the newer models and guilds all have shit that allows them to get the ball at range one way or another. Blacksmith have it, Matagi, Kakana, obviously. If they're going to make killing the ball that much harder, they need to make the kill team that much harder.
Which is something that I think we've heard is going to happen when it comes to season 4.
Yeah.
You know, that whole... I do think that the guild identity cards are going to come back as a guild rule. I think they're going to come back across the board. I think you're going to see things like butchers getting extra damage maybe when they've put bleed out, you know? Like, maybe everyone gets whatever that one is, or maybe everyone gets crucial artery, you know?
Yeah, I think if the nerf killing the ball generally, you know, just made it easier to get the ball back, or the severe punishment for having it a certain amount away from other model, I could easily see it being where getting... 3 VP for a goal would be preferable, and turn it into a 4 goal thing. Without looking at the rule, it depends how much they nerf killing the ball, big air quote. It could be that it's just like they extend the line from where, you know, get momentum up a bit, so you have to actually try and kick it into the other half. It could be something really simple that doesn't really change the game at all, but if it means the ball always have to go back into the mix, like with your fisherman team, my engineering team in particular, I could easily go, I have a model go, they get a goal. Model go, they get a goal every other time.
Yeah.
I think I got 2 goals for 2 models, one after the other.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of team we've got each.
And what you could have actually done with Pinvice is got them to activate next. You could have scored, I have the goal kick, and then that model, if it's in a bad place, can get a goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely no reason you can't get back-to-back goals from the engineering team I've currently got. I'm a bit worried for the killer team. Like, if you're a butcher, if you're a farmer player, fucking hell. If the killing ball gets hurt that badly, you've kind of got to bring Bush up, or Jack Draw, or you've got to make Fresher a thing, just to increase your goal kick range and make Threat more of a thing. It's a hard one to think on.
Mm.
I know. How would you change killing the ball?
I think the one for me that winds me up is when it's just left and not engaged with at all. I think if you put it on a high defence model and you move that high defence model away, then the sort of penalty for taking that strategy is that model's activation is just doing that. That's what they're spending their time doing, which I think is fair. It's when it's just someone drops it in the corner and then runs away from it again.
Yeah.
So it's just, so the only way to get to it is to literally move more inches, you know? And that's in that time, you're sort of getting ground down, you're getting tied up in melee, or you're getting killed. I think it's a difficult one, because what who's to say that isn't a reasonable strategy, you know? If you're playing into a shark fish, and you know that if you don't just take the ball away from his threat range, then shark will score every single time, then why are you being punished for that?
Yeah.
You know, why are you being punished for that? That's been, like, what are you meant to do? Are you meant to just give him the goal, because that's what's fair?
Well, yeah, Guild Ball isn't the kind of game game where there are a lot of like honor rules.
Yeah.
One of the things that made me become a Guild Ball player, like a better Guild Ball player, almost overnight. Like, I think one of my first games was like playing Jim Butcher, and I had my engineer, my old engineer client, and he went, "Oh, he's engaging me in melee." So I guess that's what I do.
Yeah.
And I went and I looked at the character and went, I could like blaster from 10 inch away and just keep him at and just do that all game. I got and I literally went, like, I can get cheeky and shit and a shit way to play. And then we're going like, wait a minute, that's just how the game's meant to be played. Yeah. You're meant to push every model as far as you can get them and make them as broken as you fucking can.
Yeah.
So yeah, having like a 4 damage black nerf running around is kind of strategy in the world of Guild Ball. So it's not like, yeah, there are a bunch of like cool little, you know, hey, how about we make it fun for each other style rule? People play it literally to the millimetre.
Yeah.
So yeah, when you go, yeah, what meant to do? Hand you more VP, which I know you can get. Like, a goal isn't the same as a takeout. It's so much more powerful in terms of what it is.
But I think the game we just played was a bad example because it was a long, drawn-out game and then everything happened in basically two turns. But usually the third goal is actually quite hard to find. I think the first goal you can get quite quickly. The second goal you can normally get relatively simply as well. That third goal, by then, everything is sort of crashed in the middle, you know? So I think extending it to a four-goal game by making them worth three each... Unless there was a way to increase the value of a goal in the same way that some models at the moment can increase how much their VPs are worth, how much their takeout's worth, you know, from snack break. Maybe there's some sort of way that they do that as well. I'm thinking if there's some way that...
Brisket gets out of that puffing VP shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you're suggesting that it goes down from 4 points to 3 points for a goal to make it a 4-goal game, then I think there should be a way for football heavy guilds to extend that, have one or two models that can extend the value back to four. I don't know, I don't think that the answer is changing the values of takeouts and goals. I think maybe if you get an influence every time you take out two models.
Yeah, that's my definite change. For me, on a point-to-point basis, going through the clock and taking out two models is way harder than getting a one goal, depending on the world and situation. But generally, I find that on a point-to-point basis, goals give you that much more. And depending on the team, it can be really fucking hard for them to deal with. Again, it depends on how they try to get rid of killing the ball. That's the only thing I'm worried about. If the ball goes immediately back into action, like, okay, when you do the goal kick... you always do it from the middle. So, you know, you do like an actual scatter from the centre instead of like your actual traditional goal kick.
So like it's gone off the edge of the pitch, like it's...
Yeah, they're just like going... They'll do it like a referee resetting at half-time kind of deal. But your initiative is just having the activation, whatever. You know what I do? If you've got a model halfway across the pitch, for the fisherman, halfway kind of the golden line, when you're over halfway in the pitch, there's almost no model in your team who can't get a goal.
That's looking for sprint shot territory, yeah.
Sprint shot, boom. There are very few models from Fisherman have that hard of a time. Alchemist aren't that bad either. Engineers definitely can do that. At the halfway line, it's hard for engineers not to get in tapping range.
Yeah.
I understand that if I'd have been playing a Butcher player instead of a Fisherman just now, I could already imagine looking at fucking Butcher's face and I'm like going, good luck going for that two armour. Anyway,
yeah. That two armour.
While you're grinding that fucker out. Actually, I think in the kill, you can slow kills down in a way you can't slow down goal. When someone's like getting beat up, you can heal them, unplug the gap a bit.
Yeah.
In goal, the few ways you can kind of get in the way are very kind of transient. You know, it don't really fundamentally change the nature of the thing. You basically, a bad luck in kind of one of the main buffers. A lot of positioning helps. A goalie definitely helps. The plus one TN, depending on the goalie, can't be overstated. Plus one TN is a fucking lifesaver.
So it's the plus one TN you like, it's the rush keeper that you think isn't really worth it.
I think I'd rather a model have Rushkeeper than not, but for me, Rushkeeper is super overrated. I've got this big fat model. The only guy I like Rushkeeper on is Compound. He's got Gluttonous Mass. So when you go, I'll charge Compound and get the whatever, he goes, fuck the charge. Alright, my counterattack now. You have to engage him.
Yeah.
At the very least, if you go, well, I've already got my momentum, I'll engage him. At least you take the crowd out and we can die. It's the best you can hope for. Again, I think the Butcher, the Brewer, a killer Union team to a lesser extent, depending on how you make the team. Farmer, of course. Yeah, Farman's gonna have a hard time. A lot of the other girls aren't too bad. They're a lot more balanced. I remember Mason's being viewed as like a top tier team for a while, and that's because they've got a good level of balance.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's the kind of thing you've got to be super careful about. I can see that going completely wrong and having your free goal sweep every other time. When you've got your kink and brisket and you missed. And, you know, people like that running around.
In one team.
Yeah.
But I can see the frustration. It's Guild Ball, you know? The idea is it's a sports game. I mean, obviously, we are going to try and game the shit out of it. So,
Because
you're not just going to go, oh, well, it is a sports game. I'm going to give the ball back to your main striker, like you said. But at the same time, killing the ball, I think, is such a negative thing if you're playing a team that is only going to realistically achieve 3-0. You know? Like, maybe does it then fall on you to take models that you don't really want to take, that you don't enjoy playing, because you then can get through it?
If killing the ball becomes a point where it's virtually impossible to keep a model from a striking team from getting it back, all of a sudden you're like, shit, if I'm playing a butcher team, even if I'm generally playing against a kicking team, even if killing the ball currently stands, yeah, I'll go, fuck, I've got to bring Tenderizer.
Yeah,
just to slow that shit down or try and ruin someone's day. Yeah, getting one influence every time you get to 4 VP would really help. But it'd help the takeout game. It'd help, you know, players generally actually try and keep up. That's another thing. And once you get two goals, you're getting ahead in an influence race.
Yeah.
It's hard to, you know, make come back. That's my main thing at the minute. Be super, super careful how you balance that. I don't even know. That's the thing that kind of gets me on it. I don't know what I'd change.
Yeah.
And I'm worried about, as long as they don't try and plug the gap with model.
Yeah.
The only thing that, like, if every other new model gets some ranged ball jank, there are going to be some girls from flat out left in the lurch.
I wonder if at season 4 we're going to see, when the new cards come out, that, you know, maybe a couple of models across get that, you know, like Kraken. I think I'm one of the only people in the world who plays him.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, is he going to, he's got this massive harpoon, is he going to get kill the ball? Is he going to be able to just, like, sprint at 6 inches and just fucking pelt a harpoon 6 inches to crush the ball?
Yeah, that'd be really good on the fisherman, though.
I think we're going to see some things like that. I think we're going to see more of the... I think instead of actively penalising you for killing the ball, I think it's just going to be made harder to do. You know, like we're saying about, like, this fancy footwork or Corsair's rough seas.
Yeah.
You know, I think these tackles that can be triggered off other models, I think we'll see a few of these slip into even some of the older cards. I think across all of the guilds, one or two models might get some way to actively destroy a free ball, or, like, similar to Snow's free ball, how she goes towards it.
Yeah. You know?
Or, like, how Locust can kick a free ball.
I don't know how to do it. I'm trying to think of a situation. But the problem is,
I think that's the best way, and I think that's the most likely way. Because otherwise, the only way you can do it is by actively penalising it as a strategy.
The only problem I'd have with a lot of models getting ranged ball retrieval is that that would help. It'd help the striking team more than it'd help the kill team.
I don't know, because if, say, Angel's like 14 inches away from the goal, right?
Yeah.
She's got a couple of influence on her. All she needs is someone to get the ball to her, then she can run and she can get smash it in. If I get someone to pass to her, she's now stood there with the ball, not able to do anything for at least one activation. So if you've got a way you can get someone in to, like, take the ball off her.
Yeah.
Because in a way, I've kind of killed it for myself. That goal's on the table for me to take when I want it. So if there's a way for you to be able to force me to either take it earlier at a time when it's less ideal, maybe I haven't got the momentum to bonus time it as well, or you can literally take the option away from me. You can force me to either do it when I don't want to, or you can stop me doing it if, like, the butchers have the equivalent of rough seas as well.
Yeah.
And it gets around close control.
I get with a lot of these players I'm seeing. I'm half wondering how many people at Steamwatch went, do you think close control are a bad idea looking back?
Because the problem with close control is it gives you that counter attack, and if you've got close control, you've probably got a dodge, or if you're Corsair, you've got a knockdown.
Yeah, I think my favourite thing with close control is not counter attack first, counter attack second.
Yeah.
Go, oh, you tackle, right, tackle, oh, you close control, okay, I'll try and tackle again. I know you've got to tackle, but now I get my counter attack, I tackle it back, motherfucker, or knock you down, or do whatever. I don't want to. I feel like we've got stuck on this point. I think we've just got to wait until we can fall. Like, I'm curious to what general change in Kingdom Fall are going to make.
I'm really interested. I'm really interested. We were half and half about going to that Season 4 playtest event, weren't we? I mean,
I'm definitely half and half about it.
I think, to be honest, the reason I don't want to go is because I don't want to be sitting here going, either going, oh my god, it's going to be trash, or going, well, I've got to fucking play Season 3 now, and going to tournaments and going, well, that's bullshit, and I know you can't do that in 2 months' time, you know?
I like the idea of going and getting ahead, if you know what the rules are ahead of time, you can start formulating your strategy.
But that's it. We don't know if the player cards are going to change, you know? We don't know.
Yeah, I imagine there'll be a fair few changes from the card. I swear to fucking God, if Dave hasn't been changed by Kingdom 4, I lose all fucking faith in the company. Give him a fucking point of armour, for God's sake. 2-inch melee, fucking shot him.
Anyway, where were we? Yeah, so Sikana lost his double dodge.
Yeah, on a team that can, on a team where my two big swinger are negating dodge, negating pushing. So okay.
Yeah. I think it was a particularly harsh matchup for him to be dropped into for the first time. Everyone seemed to have Stoic. If they didn't have Stoic, they had so much armor that I was struggling to hit the two to get my dodge anyway.
Yeah. Stoic where it counted.
Yeah. Yeah. Because even just hitting it on the push dodge.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucked up the push dodge. Yeah. I had that thing where I just had... We're coming off the game. I'm not even... I think I'm quite a bit tired. I'm not, like, fully. I'm just, like... I had that thing where I think I'd the... Having a loss where the things that really fucked me over were shit that felt a bit outside my control. Felt like I formulated the team specifically to go, you've got your core care team. This is my core care team.
Yeah.
Who have all the shit that you have, and I'll smash it together.
But you had a pretty catastrophic activation, which sort of turned the game, didn't it?
Yeah, I felt like I was on the right track, and I hate that, going into a game and going, alright, I know what I'm going to do here, bang, and yeah, the hand of bad luck comes in and takes it off you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I know what to be done there. So going back to Vexkana, when you first looked at the new card, what popped out to you straight away?
So the things that really leapt out to me were the raise the black flag, which is getting the enemy suffers -2/-2 movement, and one of your friendly models gains +2/+2, which on a team where I'm at each end of the spectrum, you know, I've got my big fat slow guys, I've got Corsair and Kraken who can really do with the speed buff to get somewhere,
yeah,
and then I've got Angel who could really do the speed buff to make sure as shit she gets somewhere.
Yeah.
I've got Tentacles who can be running around, and you know that makes blind suddenly got a huge threat range now.
Yeah.
You know, because instead of taking the 4-inch jog, he can take a 6-inch and get the blind off. Fancy footwork as well, you know, tackling the ball off. So you put it on a 5-0 or a 5-1 and then just run up and like be able to stamp on the head of like some knockdown 3-0 model to get the ball back is great. But the thing I sort of, there were things that jumped out because they were nice, and same with Bag of Coffers as well, because I love the idea of being able to allocate mid-turn.
Yeah.
But losing poised, that's something else I noticed, and losing poised is pretty huge. I think just as defensively, that's really nice. It's a great place for you to kill the ball yourself, like on Sikana, because you know he's going to be able to tackle it back. Because original Sikana, you know, he tackles on 2, you know, which you're going to get probably. Yeah. You know, you're 1 and 2, your first 2 columns, they're the ones that you can really secure on.
Yeah.
The third column, that's where you can start to look at getting it quite often. And then up the higher end, I think that's when you're looking at, you know, you need some setup before you get in that. So yeah, losing poised, I think, is hurting pretty hard, but I still think I prefer this Sikana to the other Sikana.
Yeah, Helmsman's very similar in nature in terms of the general stat.
So we got with movement 6-8 hasn't changed, attack of 5 hasn't changed, a kick of 3-8 hasn't changed, he's still 4s and 1. His influence, he's lost the maximum influence, so he's instead of being 2s and 4, now 1 and 3.
Yeah. Yeah, but
that one three is kind of 2-3 because he brings Bag of Coffers.
Yeah. Yeah, he adds a bit of flexibility, which is nice. I think when I'm formulating the new engineer team, the thing that made me want to go for Locus in particular wasn't particularly like remote control jank or like that. And he's not got a spectacular player book overall. But momentum knockdown on 1 makes him far more dangerous.
Yeah, that having a knockdown on 1 is just fucking great.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, it makes counterattacks suddenly more deadly. You know, it makes parting blows. You definitely don't want to be taking it.
Yeah, it's all but guaranteed on a parting blow. Yeah, even the toughest model have a hard time when you get something good on a hit. And usually when you break 5 defense, you start losing armor. 4-1 seems to be the sweet spot of defense generally, provided you don't have anatomical.
I think it's pretty much average. I think 4s and 1 tends to be average. I think you're either 4s and 1, or you're 5s and 0, or you're 3s and 0 with other defensive stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's how it pretty much goes. You've got your 5s and 0 model, or they lose a point of defense, gain a point of armor, or they go down to 3s and 0, 3s and 1, and they've got something else like tough hide.
Yeah, a good way of factoring in, yeah, I think 4-1 general is the baseline. But like, take a 3-1 model, you're gonna get good when you get into the 2 territory. Don't even fucking think about it. The good thing about something good on a hit is that almost across the board, it's almost guaranteed. Makes it really good. It's a really good counterattack discourager as well.
The knockdown on one.
Yeah. Stops you from eating up momentum, but you put in a position where you can actually try and push your advantage on that. Yeah, looking at a brand new model right out of the gate where they've got something good early on their playbook.
Tackle on one stepped out as well, you know.
Yeah.
Original Sakana's tackles on two. So the idea that this guy's got a tackle on one, non-momentous, yeah, but he's got the momentous fancy footwork on three.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he's hitting high, he's getting that. If he's if you just need a tackle you can rely on, you got it on one.
Yeah, it makes him really good against certain models. Okay, if you pick out any model at random, I think I think team building is a completely different thing, but looking at a model on an individual basis and going, I think it's weird. You can always imagine, I think people find it quite easy to imagine they're super good activations.
Yeah.
You always want, I think people have got that inner min-maxer who wants to, you know, one-shot motherfuckers or have that thing, the situation where they're getting plus a million damage or whatever. But the thing that makes a lot of models, separates really good models from bad models, is having shit that's decent, not great or spectacular, but just okay early on.
Yeah.
Like, there's some models who have like a moment of 2 damage on 2 hits.
Yeah.
Fucking great.
Yeah.
If a 4 influence, that's almost a guaranteed 8 damage.
Yeah.
With a bit of momentum, with pile load of momentum to throw in there. Just makes them super fucking solid. Really just
reliable.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it usually has some compound effect of a lot of models. Like when you get momentum damage early on, like a momentum 2 on 2, tooled up, doesn't that much more work for you then.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you're giving anything up to get the, you know, damage or whatever. I'll give him a good example where he's got the 2 character players. They're okay, but to be fair, destructive impulse for what you pay for it is pretty fucking shit.
Yeah.
2 damage, 2-inch push.
Yeah.
And it's 1 per turn as well. It's like, ooh, don't want to give him too many 2-inch pushes.
It's not
spectacular.
It's not Deadbolt.
Yeah, well, fucking hell. No, what could be Deadbolt? Probably one of the best character players in the fucking game, Deadbolt. Just so fucking good. There aren't that many models who I think I look at and go, they're just entirely character play. Generally, I like a good reliable playbook. Sheena in particular, I think, got a really nice playbook. I almost always get something good out of her. JKR as well, like Rundash from the Falconer. When I looked at his card generally and had a look at, like, oh, I got a Shadow, like, oh, that's nice, tough hide, well, I'll take it. 3-1 on 13 fucking boxing, you better have some. Fuck me, he's gonna die so quick. But looking at him generally, his playbook is super fucking solid. It's like good damage momentously throughout the board.
Yeah.
Great, reliable. Underline the reliability. Yeah. It's what makes anatomical so good on a lot of models.
Yeah.
It adds a layer of reliability to your character.
It's like a second safety net, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like where I was saying that you're normally looking for your first 2 columns, you know, your third every now and then. With anatomical, that the third opens up to the other side of every now and then. It's sort of, more often than not, you know, unless you're going after a 5s and 0 model. You know, if you're going after a 4s and 1, yeah.
Yeah, if I had to take a model that had a 5-1 playbook but 5 tack and didn't have anatomical, but had a 5-1 playbook and 4 tack with anatomical, I'd take the anatomical guy. But okay, anatomical gets rid of that guaranteed takeout.
Yeah, yeah.
But with the anatomical, it's always in the realm of possibility you can get the full stick of butter out of that.
Yeah.
It's
like when I did a counterattack, it was Corsair into Locus. He was losing the dice for the mother's webbing. He was losing nest marker. He was losing losing a dice for the cover, so he went from 5 down to 3.
Yeah.
He then he was losing 2 armour. It was literally impossible for him to gain the knockdown on his second playbook. But if he'd had anatomical at that point, at least it would have been in the realms of possibility.
Yeah, it could have been done.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Falcon situation where... anatomical provide a layer of reliability. I don't think I can overstate that enough with the models. The models that I like a lot, I like them not because they're explosive or they've got this like limit. I think Sheena is probably the most like big activation model that I really like.
Yeah.
Her whole thing is like, have the big charge and I get the 2 big fuck you attacks and hopefully that'll go well.
Yeah.
But outside of it, like J-Cart, I don't particularly like J-Cart because he can get form damage on 6. He almost never gets it. But I like J-Cart because he gets a couple of damage early and he can dodge and he gets momentum and he can go on fucking strain. And it's reliable, more importantly.
It's that thing that when you activate J-Cart, you know you're going to get some damage, you know you're going to get some dodges, you know. Yeah. When you activate Kraken, you know you're going to get the knockdown.
Yeah.
It's and that sort of takes an element, almost takes an element of randomness out, you know.
Yeah, I think I've said to you before, the strongest players in this game by far, anything that takes a layer, anything you don't have to roll for, great. It just takes a layer of randomness and unpredictability out of the game.
Yep.
And I think that's mainly that's the good thing about having good results early in your playbook. The playbook, out of all the things in on your card, your playbook is probably the biggest variable in terms of what you can reliably get. Like a character play, the mathematics behind it is so simple, you can usually make quite an informed decision about how good or bad it is. And usually a character play has 2 dice and you're probably going to get it most of the time. The way character plays for balance, thank fuck they ignore armour. But the balance is such a way that you can kind of rely on character play for a lot. The playbook is the biggest wild card and you're factoring in a lot of different things on a model to model basis. Okay, a 2 armour model in cover is just going to give you a nightmare of a time.
Yeah.
Don't get who the fuck you are.
What great place to kill the ball.
Not that good, evidently.
Yeah.
Fuck it, you get 3 hits. Boom, that's mine now.
Yep.
Off a pop. But after playing the Locust, I really wish Gravity Well wasn't directly towards. I wish it was just towards.
Yeah, there was... it was the first time you ran him out, wasn't it?
Mm.
And it was interesting, because the fact that they have to end the advance as well, it would have been helpful for you in many a situation if it was just as soon as you know. Because, what was it? It was Sakana started his activation engaging, but outside of your engagement, and you said, oh, well, when you tried to jog away.
Oh, yeah, to get the pass. Yeah. Again, how many times one inch melee just comes back to haunt me over and over again. It's really, even with all the, you know, benefits and buffs and all that lot, I think there's nothing worse than that feeling of helplessness on the end of one inch melee. I think the more I play against it and the more I kind of reflect on it, the more it starts to bother me as the game goes on.
Mm.
Where, like I say, I get into that mind space of like going, how nice it is to play the game knowing that you don't have to deal with like some of the harshest mechanics. Like some of the worst activations you have. I think some of the worst moments I've ever had in Guild Ball are when I've gone for someone's counter-attacked and they've just fucked an activation.
Yeah.
And that'll put you in a fucking bad situation no matter what. That just puts you on tilt straight away.
That alright, I'm going to use my entire movement for this activation, moving literally a hair's distance just so I'm back in where you stepped away, so I'm now within an inch of you.
Yeah.
You're going to counter-attack and push me out. Okay, done. Over.
Yeah. Jake, I'm quite bad for that. Where anyone who gets a double push vaguely early, it's just going to fuck him up. He can't do anything about it. If I've stood up, there's nothing he can do, really. That element of being on the...
Kraken's great at. He's got a double push on 2.
Yeah.
Getting out of my... He's like, just, if someone comes in to try and hit him, I'm just like, get out of my village.
Yeah, you need 2-inch melee. Yeah. Like, that would I think the thing I'll change.
So you'd balance the game by making goals worth 3 points instead of 4. You'd get an influence every time you got 2 takeouts. You'd take away melee zones completely. Everyone can attack everyone.
I don't mind 2-inch melee,
but
people underestimate how hard it is for 1-inch melee. Like, I almost feel like we've got 2 different set of rules because I don't have enough 2-inch melee guys.
Yeah.
It's not like you have 2. Like, 2 or 3. Yeah, you've got most of your team's got 2-inch melee.
Angels, anyone who hasn't.
Yeah.
That's how I run it, because I like being able to hold someone at arm's length.
Just go, yeah, I get this and you don't get that. No dice rolls, no nothing, no factoring in that kind.
The thing is that I haven't got the damage output. I think that it's certainly... I will admit that, yeah, I think you're right that a lot of 2 inches are starting to be thrown out. I think that maybe, I'd even go as far to say that I think maybe too much 2-inch melee is being thrown out. But when I started playing, and I started playing Fish, being that sort of fragile team, I kind of needed to keep people at arm's distance.
Yeah.
Just because, well, I wasn't going to be killing anyone, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be several activations before I get the kill. I haven't got any vet rage monsters, you know. I need to be able to keep someone at arm's distance, get the ball, and be able to clear off without really having to worry about being eaten in the process.
Yeah. I think the thing that gets me, it's not even as much 2-inch melee on your end, it's when it's on my end that it becomes a problem. Okay, the compound effect it has throughout the game, I think, becomes quite a problem. That thing of, like, yeah, the harshness it has on 1-inch melee characters.
Mm.
Okay, the fact you have to basically give up movement becomes a huge problem. For some models, it becomes like really a, I don't know what to do in this situation kind of thing.
Mm.
With a JKR style model, who's a great damage dealer, but doesn't have a way to negate a counterattack. Like, if you are stood up, you can get a counterattack against JKR. If he's willing to give up, you know, he avoids counterattack, if he's willing to give up the turn and get out of your melee range, which you can do, but, you know, the threat is taken care of one way or another.
Mm.
Yeah, and he'd go, the only way you can negate counterattack with JKR is if you give them what they would have been looking for anyway. It's like, I'll go for my daily Street Fighter reference. There was like a character who came out on like Street Fighter 4 a few years ago, really good, and they had like a setup where they could like put you in like this situation where you had to guess what they were going to do when you could take a shitload of damage, and a guy found a way out of it, and he went, oh, I do this and I just take a bit of damage. And I went, fuck, if the best way out of that situation is so good, if the best way out is to just go, fuck, I'll just take damage.
Yeah.
Like, that's how good that setup is. It's like the only way to escape it reliably is to take a chunk of damage instead of potentially losing half your fucking health.
Yeah.
Like, going, that's what it kind of feels like. We're going in going like, yeah, you've got all these tools, and the only way I negate it is by giving you what you want. Yeah. Anyway, so what's even the point? I do wish for a couple mechanics. Like, I think one of the way I kind of do it, is I'd maybe let you use a dodge after a counterattack is called, or a push dodge. Like, you can stall a push dodge or choose when to resolve it or something like that.
So you almost want like an interrupt attack instead of a counterattack. You want like to sort of, then you want Sakana to attack you, have the dodge result, but you to attack before he uses the dodge result.
Well, yeah, it's like a JKR versus Kraken situation.
Right.
I think that thing of going like, alright, attack Kraken, I get a 2 damage double dodge or whatever, or a dodge. Okay, I just have shit die, 1 dodge. I go, okay, I do the 1 damage, I'll keep the dodge.
Mm.
You can't tap double push. Okay, I use the dodge.
Oh, to come back in.
To come back in. To be fair, I don't know how I'd do it without just making it. At that point, it feels kind of pointless.
Mm.
I'm not sure how I'd do it.
Yeah, because you'd just choose something else on your counter attack.
Yeah.
You'd either just lay into them or you'd take the knockdown.
Yeah, I'm really... Really, for a lot of it, like, I have, like, for the free VP for getting a goal, I would only do if the tech they're bringing in to killing the ball, we literally had a chance to put the ball, you know, back into the possession of another player.
Yeah. Sort of maybe instead of a goal kick just being 10 inches with a scatter, a goal kick is it goes onto one of your models within 10 inches of the goal.
Yeah.
Like a keeper would pass back out.
Yeah. Like, I played striking teams and footbally teams, and I know as well as anyone, like, if you goal kick and it goes wrong on your end,
yeah,
I'm already going, fucking hell, I'm out of 2 goals in a row here.
Yeah, so what if you, the goal kick, you could either give it to one of your models within 6 inches of the goal, or you could boot it out 10 inches?
I think it would still have a similar problem, where you don't get your activation. I think just having someone run off with it, a bit of run off and then kick it, to clear.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, off the top of my head, I can't think of the answer to the solution to the problem of killing the ball.
Is that why you're so worried about it? Because you seem more worried about the fact that they've said they're going to address killing the ball more than I am. Do you think that, what do you think that is?
Because when, first off, I already think striking teams are quite powerful already in the game. I've already mentioned before, getting a goal beat taking models out, by far, in a point for point, influence for influence, activation for activation, like point, yeah, just in every way I can think of, getting a goal is just better than killing people. If you're going to introduce a situation where scoring is that much more likely.
So do you mean that you think that you already think that scoring is more powerful than the
generally
taker.
yeah,
and so you're thinking that the way they're saying they're going to change the prevent you killing the ball, that basically the way to read that is they're going to make scoring goals easier, so
by definition
so it's already more powerful, and
killing for some teams killing the ball. Like, it's not like if you kill the ball with the brewer, you go, I'm guaranteed to get 4 VP now. Yeah. It's not the same way. You might, the takeout game just isn't unreliable. There are so many more variables in getting damage in the takeout game than getting a goal. And so when you kill the ball, that's just the minimum you need to buy yourself time to maybe kill the model. Depending on the team, really. But if killing the ball becomes that much weaker, and again, you know, if you get a good goal scatter, if your opponent goes for a goal scatter that kind of anywhere near, vaguely near your model, and it doesn't go his way, how often are you like, I've got this guy now. He needed that to go that way, or he needed this, and now I'm on the verge of getting 8 VP. And like, when you get into 8 VP territory, how different does the game become in terms of mental fortitude and where the game can go and where your model can go? How much more easy is it to take risks with your model, knowing full well you only need one goal? And with the church coming out and then being a super strikey team who can already fuck around with the enemy goal, if killing the ball becomes that much weaker and getting the ball becomes that much easier,
yeah,
it means, like, I always get worried about imbalancing game, because even if you change it, it does not take long to really ruin a game for a good bit of time. I think if
gamers game things, they will find something and break it.
Yeah, hypothetically, killing the ball became so hard to do that it became giving the ball to the enemy, and you flat out needed to outstrike them. Striking teams would run so roughshod over killing. You'd easily have games where you go, by the time I get to VP on kill, you've won the game. And I can easily see that happening with a lot of guilds. If that becomes powerful, church become popular, fish become popular, the game just becomes nothing but scoring. And in that matchup, I think the church will be more popular. And you have to plug that hole super quick. I know people have that thing where they go, oh, I'm really invested in this game, nothing can get me out of it. But I don't think it takes that many months for a game to become ruined for some people. How many times have you like tried to get someone into a game, they've had a bit of a bad time a couple of times, and they're gone, ah, fuck it, they never play it again. If you show up to a Guild Ball game, you play Guild Ball 3 months, and you're like, the latest jank is just running chaos over the game. Every game I go to, yeah, I've got that line up, I win. Yeah. Oh, fucking hell. Who do you play? Brewers. And I've only got the kickoff box yet, so here's Dave. Fucking hell, I'm a fat bastard.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get a wrap and fucking 8-inch worth of dodge. I think you can't underestimate how careful you have to be with shit like that. Okay, in this kind of game, anything that relates to movement is good. And yeah, this has just become a huge killing the ball topic. I can't think of a way off the top of my head you can change the way, because again, the killing the ball isn't like some kind of clever fucking thing. It's usually just kicking it out to space. How do you change the rules in such a way that making that becomes more difficult or not good without completely fucking over kill team? And I don't think the gradient in kill team is high people think. Farmers, butchers, brewers, make them to a lesser extent, some union team. Like, you know how we've been on the game? I feel like you can pick any team, anything, other than maybe a farmer, entire reaper team, or planet team, and you have a chance.
Yeah.
Killing the ball makes some teams more viable. Like, some kill teams are doable only because, like, at farmer setup I ran the other day, that was my fuck you killer team.
Yeah.
You had your own fuck you killer team, and they could do better than me on that regard. But killing the ball is what makes that team even viable.
Yeah.
Like, that, if you can even get the ball back, that goes from, I've got a fucking great kill team, they're going to run through, 5 influence, 8 attack, whatever. Go from, well, fuck, I've got to bring bushel minimum, to even keep the fucking ball.
The tactic is for some teams to just go, right, we're going to park up here. If you score, we'll kick it back out into our little scrum. And if we receive, then fuck it, we'll just start here with it anyway.
Yeah.
And they've just got this little ball with the ball in the middle of it. And they're like, come on then.
Yeah.
So, like, if some teams are then punished for that.
Well, actually, there are teams where their entire strategy is focused around it. And let's say you're a I'll use the Butchers in particular, because they've got not great kickers, and they already fucking struggle a bit anyway for very good killers. For them, killing the ball is the beginning of their game.
Mm.
Like, that kind of go, all right, now that I've got that dealt with, I can start.
But the one thing, I think there are two things that are floating around in the public knowledge that we know are going to be looked at in season 4.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that it's been said publicly that killing the ball is going to be addressed, and that kill teams are going to get a buff.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, even though it's called season 4, you need to think of it what it is. This is an addition change.
Yeah.
This is their opportunity to go back and change core rules. This is to go back and change the way the game fundamentally functions. You know, I think our last game of season 3 and our first game of season 4, yeah, we're probably both still going to be playing to 12 VP. We're probably going to be getting them VP by either scoring goals or getting takeouts. But a huge amount could change. As long as it's still with like a D6 system, the TAC and everything being generated the same way, then I think everyone's going to be basically happy it's the same game. And yeah. I think you're going to see huge, huge changes to the way teams... I think, you know, playbook's going to fucking change. This is their chance because they don't do this every year, you know?
I hope... I kind of... Including saying that out loud, it's going to be a complete fundamental change of the entire game. Like, I kind of hope that it's the case.
I mean, like, yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think there's going to be suddenly fucking Space Marines walking around with semi-automatics or whatever.
But... Fucking Blacksmith that far off, I'll tell you. A Burnish Gog. Yeah, you've got a LMG 42.
Yeah.
20 damage. I hope it ain't a fundamental game change.
Alloy, basically a jump trooper.
Oh, fucking hell.
The Ultramarines, that's what they are, mate.
Oh, fuck that team. The
fucking right in its eyes.
If it's not a fundamental change of the game, okay, it's hard to be picky and choosy in the rule when you get to the core element of the game. And I don't think people realise just how quickly a game can go completely off the fucking rails.
I think that having the playtest event is going to be... Oh, fuck, I would love to be on a fly... I would love to be a fly on the wall of the meeting they have the day after that playtest event.
Yeah.
I would... Because there's going to be people there, and I just hope that the people going don't just do that thing of, oh yeah, no, it was really good. But just have a fucking opinion, right? If you've got an opinion, voice it. That is literally the opportunity to do it. Edition changes are when player numbers of a game hugely change. If this game gets shit because people didn't say anything at the Season 4 playtest event,
yeah,
fuck me.
I think you've got to watch out for that. Like I said before, when you check the forums, I don't look for people going, ooh, Jank's really good, or ooh, I can get 5-8 kick. When I don't look at the details of the game, how much fun did they have? If some guy looks at the Season 4 rules going, hey, my striker team can just mow someone down now, perfect, I've never had as much fun on this game.
Yeah.
Finally, I can play the game I want to play. And don't get me wrong, I think for teams who need free goals, no takeouts, it can struggle. I don't mind coming to help them push that over. But for me, if you're going to make free hero viable, you need to make hero viable.
What needs to happen is that the spectrum, the viability, 6-0 and 3-0, they just need to be compressed down. It needs to be that your win percentage, like the odds of you winning the game, aren't based around if you're trying to score goals or if you're trying to get takeouts. The odds of you winning a game needs to be based on how well you play, whether that's by like taking out the peaks and troughs of the strengths and weaknesses of like models across the board, whether that's making stave good, whether that's just throwing the blacksmiths out the window, right? They need to do something to sort of balance, you know, not to say that this is the most unbalanced game in the world. I think Guild Ball is probably, if you listen to Strictly the Worst a few episodes ago, I think it was Alex said that if you were going to say to someone, what is the most competitive miniatures game currently?
Yeah.
You know, Guild Ball. It's because the rules are so tight and because it's so balanced. There's no sort of, you can't turn up to a tournament and go, oh, here's my broken as fuck list.
Yeah.
Here's the thing where I win because I'm basically playing a bit of a different game to everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, and part of that is down to, you know, the guilds being so narrow and not having really deep benches, you know, that I think by bringing in the minor guilds, that was much better than the fishermen's getting 6 more models over the course of the next year or so, because you do hit that point where there's bloat within factions where every faction can do everything. What's the fucking point of there being different factions? Yeah. You might as well just pick a colour instead, you know? So, fuck, what was my point?
Turned into an angry episode.
No,
generally the tone of it's been really, the energy has been really low, and then like it's not even gone like we've had a burst of anger. It's like a kind of slow creeping. Listen here, you fucker. I swear to God, I feel like this can turn into like a manifesto. People are gonna look back on that going like, have you heard him in this episode? You're obviously gonna kill everyone at Steamforged.
It's just... I'll tell you what, it's because this is the first time there's been a game that I've actually been bothered about.
I know exactly what you mean. You know what? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm the calmest motherfucker on the planet, right? And I...
Apathetic to a T. You don't give a shit about anything.
Yeah, yeah. I'm one of the most positive nihilists I know. Like, I just... Everything cool, whatever, it'll work itself out. And, yeah, I remember, I remember talking to my housemate, and you're going like, I don't think I've ever, I've known her 15 years, I'm like, I've never seen you angry, never, ever. And I'm playing Street Fighter, and she was just like, looking at me in shock, and I'm like, motherfucker! I was literally just like, and when you care about something, you do get invested. And I think the reason I can get angry at shit like Street Fighter and Guild Ball is because I can care about it, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's why I can get angry. Like, when I'm talking to a person, the reason I don't get angry at people is I don't like being that guy who ruins someone's day.
Yeah.
I go, like, I can't, it's not free to get angry at them, you know what I mean? I can't just go, oh, fuck, I've had a bad day. Go fuck yourself, you in particular. And they walk off miserable and I go, well, I feel good about what I've done.
Yeah.
Guild Ball is safe. I can get angry at that and it don't matter. But because I care about the actual game, I think it's really well made, really well balanced. I like the guild, I like the model, I like the way it comes together. That's why I'm hugely concerned. Okay, in a fighting game or League of Legends or any video game, when a character or a team becomes really powerful, you look at a tournament, top 8,
yeah.
All that's all they are.
Yeah.
I don't want to be looking at Guild Ball tournament for the next 3 months seeing top 8 just be Union, Church and Fishermen.
Yeah.
They changed one thing about killing the ball and it just made it impossible to stop that team.
Yeah.
Like, okay, striking teams are the kind of team snowball. They can just have activations where bang, 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 you've lost the game. Even kill teams need something really beautiful to come together to make just ironic. Looking a fucking turn.
Yeah.
And that's something 3p worth.
Yeah.
Like, 2 goals in a row isn't really like that big of a deal. But imagine, like, when you played Dave Blacksmith team and he went, I do the jank, I've got 8 VP, 2 activations for him.
Yeah.
Like,
less than 6 minutes on the clock.
How would you win that game if you can't kill the ball? Like, yeah. If he starts out with that, 8 VP up. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm sure the stuff you can do knowing the jank and shit. But it's fucking possible for him to get it.
The thing, fucking hell, this has turned into an hour and a half of killing the ball. But
we'll kill the ball, the episode.
But where does... They've said they're going to address it. In Season 4, it's going to be addressed. In 4th edition of Guild Ball, killing the ball will be addressed. It will be changed. It will not be made as viable. But what is killing the ball? Is killing the ball putting it out to space? Is killing the ball putting it on a high defence model?
Yeah.
Is killing the ball putting it on one of your models where you know they can't reach it? You know, there is that's why we're so worried about it. I think that's why both of us are so worried about it, is because this nebulous concept of killing the ball is going to be nerfed when really we don't know what that is. You can't quantify it.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it if they changed the football game to make the football game more dynamic. Like, if they changed it to get a goal for EVP, right?
Mm.
I wouldn't mind shit like, you know, like Pin Viking oil token, where everyone can pass back and forth and shit. I wouldn't mind a more dynamic game like that, where you can actually do a shitload of manoeuvring with the ball on your activation if you've got the influence.
There was one thing in this game in particular that we've just played, there was one moment where I was looking at it and I was going, you know what would be good? I was actually thinking, you know what would be really fun,
yeah.
Yeah.
Underline the fun.
Jack was within 6 inches of Angel. Sorry, yeah. No, let's start at the end. Angel was within 4 inches of the goal.
Yeah.
Jack was within 6 inches of Angel. Sakana was within 8 inches of Jack. Sakana had the ball. What I really wanted to be able to do more than anything was to be able to pass to Jack, and then as in a similar way that like snapshot costs 2, if I could have spent 2 momentum for Jack to pass to Angel, for Angel to then snapshot, you know, like some sort of, like you're saying, just more dynamic, sort of more, you can do more things. Because the reason I first dropped the fish is because I got bored of every single game trying to be the same, trying to do exactly the same thing. So a little bit more, just a bit more of a wiggle.
Well, yeah, I won't mind like chained teamwork action. If you get the dice and you get the position in, like the idea that I pass to a model and they can pack it down the line, and then that model can do a 4-inch dodge or that kind of shit. You'd have to nerf VP on goal, but I think you should have to. But in a hypothetical world where goals were left, I wouldn't mind way more dynamic play and way more packing to each other, more shit outside of activation. You never know. The thing that's getting me about thinking forward at the minute, I know I'm a bit doom and gloom this episode. I am really looking forward to it, but you have to. I think Guild Ball is currently at a moment where you have to be super fucking careful about what you're changing at the minute.
That was the point I was making.
Yeah.
When I said that Strictly the Worst said that it's the tightest rule set and everything, that was the point I was making. It's because it's so tight, you've got to be careful, because if you change too much, it suddenly loses that title. You know, it stops being so tight, it stops being so great. What, you know, this is my competitive game, this is the game I play, because I know that there's not, the rules in this aren't flexible. There's very few people who can just sort of go, and I'm changing how the game fundamentally works now, you know?
Yeah, it's, the way it's played generally, people, it's not exaggerations, okay? People go to the millimetre. Like, you get every fucking inch of movement, you get every single bit. There's no general guideline for what you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, you take every fucking inch, you get every fucking dice, you get every plus one you can lay your fucking hand on. And that's just the way the game is generally played. There's no... Yeah, there are no honour rules or middle ground or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of, in many ways, the dice are kind of the only X factor in it. I don't know how to end this one. I've got your down note.
We're not ending on a down note, because what we're ending it on is, we spend this much time every week making a podcast, editing a podcast, getting fucking t-shirts, but we've got t-shirts!
Fucking, what are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? We are now. We need to get them high definition photo. Unbuttoned shirt.
Yeah.
Man, fucking. I do really like the game, which is why I'm kind of very, very, very wary. So many fucking games go down the shitter.
That's one of the things we were saying. Like we were saying, like we were half and half about going to season 4. I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons I don't want to go is I don't like it. You know what I mean? Like, what if I go and I'm just like, shit, I really don't like the direction this game's going now.
Welcome to the Warhammer Skirmish podcast.
So that's it. If you're going to that season 4 playtest event and you see something you don't like, say something. Don't try and be polite.
Yeah.
So that got wildly off track. Veteran Sakana, I really like him. I'm going to keep playing him. I think he replaces original Sakana.
Like after all the... Well, anyway, yeah. After that, Veteran Sakana's all right, isn't
he? I keep trying to talk about him, but I keep getting dragged off piece. But yeah.
It's not a huge amount of cake. It's very similar to regular Sakana in many ways, but the shift that he's got...
His position tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
Original Sakana is a striker. Veteran Sakana is an attacking midfielder. That is the changes completely, really. He's gone from being someone who I would keep on a wing, ready for that killer goal run. He's gone from that striker to bringing him more into a support second striker position, you know? He's still got that 3-8 kick, you know, which...
Super reliable.
So good. Even just to be a pass for that snapshot for that winning goal, you know. Because when I'm doing it properly, and my snapshot turret set up and just got 6 dice. You know?
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, I really like Sakana, really like his playbook. I think the lack of double dodges and his moving him towards pushes and push dodges.
Yeah.
And that he triggers both character plays on 3 hits, and they're both quite supporty plays, you know, stealing the ball so he can get it out to someone else, you know, who he can then, if they're close enough, throw a bag of coffers on. Great.
Yeah, very flexible, way more reactive than regular Sakana.
Mm.
Help in a way, like, yeah, he can just help another model. Really, really goes a long way for the team. I'm super curious what the other guy can gonna look like now. Don't give a shit about the Blacksmith player, I don't really play him. Fang Tooth and Spigot, though, I'm particularly looking forward to.
Mm.
I don't know what you do with Fang Tooth. I really hope, by the way, that's another thing I'm thinking for. Hope Fang Tooth gets a bit of fucking love.
Well, that's what I mean. I think it's going to be, right, who's never played? Let's give them something.
Yeah, give them
the bit.
Give them a hand.
Yeah.
How are you? We're going to call it on this?
Yeah, I think call it a day.
Holy shit.
Yeah, fucking hell.
Who knew we had some strong opinion from killing the ball?
Yeah,
I think it's one of the few topics where we have like a few agree to disagree moments where I'm generally of the opinion like my projected changing are like really over the top. I'm at either end. Either barely touch the game, or if you're going to change it, break the whole thing fucking down and rebuild it again. I don't know. Probably can I play a bit of a killer? I generally tend to like my killer. Can you generally tend to like your dragon?
It's quite good because we've got both sides of the fence, haven't we?
Yeah. But not a friendly home improvement neighbourly.
I'll tell you what though, as you've just gone, you know, and you like your strikers game, and they've gone, yeah, I do. As I've just bought some scenic bases for a Vet Rage team. Yeah, I do. Hello.
Oh, yeah, shit, yeah, we'll get into that another time. Who's the first to buckle and get on the Vet Rage train?
Well, the problem was he was just so fun.
Fun, too fun for his own good. It's a shame Vet Rage is so boring to play again.
I might just go fuck you and buy Blacksmith.
I message you back immediately going, I'm going to think of a counter to Vet Rage immediately.
Mm. You know what that counter is?
I might.
Blacksmiths.
I'm going to think of Vet Rage, but. Alright, gang. We're going to peek out.
Should we do the. We've got Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, yeah, shit, yeah.
Yeah, we're on. That is official podcast dog. Yeah. At the Firm Podcast on Twitter. Yeah. Let us know if you think there's something you'd like us to do more, something that you'd like us to do less. Might do it, might not. We've also got Facebook, do the same, The Firm Podcast.
The Firm on Facebook. Yeah.
Dash another Gilball podcast. And Ryan will get in touch with you straight away. If you tweet, I will.
Yeah, get on Facebook. If it'll show me a notification, I usually reply to pretty much everything. Because, you know, work is boring.
That's all. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.